Simply Financial with certified financial planner Christopher Calandra is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to episode number 15 of the Simply Financial podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. Thanks for joining me today. The topic today is cracking the 21st century career code. I have with me as a special guest, Marsha LaRue. She is the president and owner of Forward Motion LLC. She founded the company in 2007. She is a career strategist that works with both job seekers and employers to ensure business and career success. Part of the reason that Marsha is on today, and I've known her for some 8 years or so, is she just published her first book, Career Mageddon. Her co-author is Neil Patrick, and today we're going to talk about the book and her thoughts on careers in this century. So Marsha, thank you so very much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So to begin with, it's your first book. Why did you and Neil decide to write Career Mageddon?
It's interesting, as we are all into this whole career scene. I don't think there's anybody in the U.S. since 2007 or 8, the Great Recession, that hasn't been thinking about career issues, even if they've been employed through the whole thing. And what we're learning is that technologies and other factors are changing jobs so quickly that more jobs are leaving the workplace than we're able to generate moving forward. So with that in mind, how do we even begin to cope with this?
So this book, you're a professional career strategist. You work with people day in and day out. Neil Patrick, I don't know him personally. I see from the material I reviewed in preparation for the podcast is a very accomplished business strategist in his own right. So who is the audience for this book?
That's a really good question, because the first thing is, well, job seekers. Okay. You know, they're going to want to read this book. But what we're realizing now, and this is critical, if people, and this is what we've done in this country, we get a job and we do the job, and then if we lose the job, we look for another job. Mm-hmm. At that point, if we wait, it's too late. Things are changing so quickly. People are in jobs most of the time a maximum of 3 years. So knowing that that's what's going to happen, we need to have a strategy that doesn't look to the next job. It looks to the one after that and the one after that. So I'm working with people to think at least two jumps ahead so that they can manage it and alter what needs to be altered as things change.
Wonderful. Okay. So one of the premises of your book is that there's a global job crisis. And I think it was worthwhile in the book, you noted about everything seems to be a crisis today. If you read, if you watch the news, there's this crisis, that crisis. So in some ways, the word crisis doesn't mean what it used to be. But I think it is a genuine long-term trend where the nature of the workforce is going to continue to change dramatically. We're going to talk about that today. But can you just touch on your view of what you describe as the global jobs crisis?
Yes. And the interesting thing about it is it's not really my view. We can look at the World Bank, and they are telling us that by 2030, we've got to have 600 million more jobs in first world countries if we're going to keep up, if people are going to have a revenue stream. If we look at the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and the International Labor Organization also, they're looking at least 100 million jobs. Now, this was cited in G20. Okay. When the G20 thing came through, and they were saying, we have a global jobs crisis now. So no matter where you go, it's not just U.S., it is global. We have real issues, and it has nothing to do with politics.
Okay. So you do cite in the book some, I think you call it the six engines of change. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could go through some of those six engines of change and touch on those a little bit. Mm-hmm. We can't go into it as great a depth as you do in the book, but if you could touch on globalization and offshoring, we hear a lot about that. You mentioned that the book is not a political book. but coming on the heels of last year's election and even the elections before, there's a lot of talk of globalization, shipping jobs overseas. Many Americans have been touched by it, and most Americans know somebody that have been deeply affected by this trend. So can you touch on that and how it plays into the global jobs crisis?
Yes. So Neil and I were looking for, how do we look forward? How do we manage a career looking forward? And the deal is, everybody needs a revenue stream if they're going to survive, for themselves, their family. So what are the engines that change? And we divide them into two groups. So the first group, globalization, offshoring, technology, artificial intelligence, robotics, disruptive business models like Uber. Now, these are a natural part of the free market economy. They're coming in. Businesses are making decisions to go driverless. Businesses are making decisions that I don't have to go to the bank. I can actually take pictures of my check through my iPhone. I don't need to go to the bank.
That's right.
So we look at those. These are natural. We can get more money by not needing all these people. So by efficiencies brought on by technologies, if I were a person that, I go to banks all day and I fix those ATMs, they need to be looking for another job. Because they're not going to have one. So the first set is just about the natural economic ways that businesses want to be efficient and manage their revenue. The other three, sometimes economic policy can impact upon them, but this is education and the speed of change. I haven't met anybody that doesn't think our educational system needs changing.
And so, I don't know what your opinion is, and this is a little off topic, but I think over the next 10, 12 years, we're set to see an enormous amount of change in education. Yes. It's been resistant to technology in many, many ways, but I think those walls will come down soon and we'll see an enormous amount of change.
A huge change. I agree with you completely, and I also think it has to change. As someone who's spent most of my career in education, I'm looking forward to it, and the opportunities are going to be incredible. So another part of the second group, which is a part of society like demographics, for example, we know that millennials are going to, they're going to look at the entire job place. They're going to manage it by 50%. Millennials are going to dominate the workforce for the next 50 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a demographic to think about.
Yes.
So if companies aren't so cool about getting millennials in, that's going to be a problem because they're not going to have anybody to get in if they're not going to be interested in the millennials.
That makes complete sense.
So demographics, education, fiscal policy, those are things that affect this second set of engines.
So one of the things you talk about in the first grouping, which includes globalization and offshoring, technology, artificial intelligence, robotics, and generally disruptive business models, what I think is really important to consider with this is the pace of change. Because economies have changed, and there's been technological advances from the steam engine to the railroad to the airplane to the computer. But it's not just the change, right? Isn't it the fast pace that a company like a Facebook or an Uber or Airbnb, they're not only going to change the competitive landscape for their industry, it's going to happen in the blink of an eye.
Yes, you are right on target with that. And that's why people have to know how to look, how to listen differently to see if their job is going to be no longer in existence. I tell people in corporate worlds, they need to have a really good friend in IT. Because somebody comes out, what's going on in IT? Well, we're gonna hire a bunch of systems analysts. Really? Systems analysts? Well, that means they're going to analyze systems, which means maybe there's an M&A where there's going to be a combination of technology systems from one company to another that are going to merge.
Right.
Having a friend in IT, if somebody's in a corporate world, I think it's critical.
Yes. Now, as this fast pace of change continues and you have this global job crisis, because in many instances you have more jobs dropping off because of technology than are being added, and the individuals getting dislocated from the job loss are not the same ones that will be well positioned for the new industries that are created. So I have a trivia question for you. Is what is the number one occupation in terms of the most amount of people are in this occupational field?
In the U.S.?
Yes.
First world countries? Drivers.
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 And so you have coming down the pike driverless cars and trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that. I drive a decent amount. I think the power of that in terms of safety, convenience, efficiency, environmental issues, I mean, it's a really powerful thing that's coming down our way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be good on balance.
Mm-hmm.
But not if you're a driver.
Yes. So I work with anybody. I mean, I work with senior executives in major insurance companies. But I also work with this guy. He's one of my heroes. He's a driver. He's a truck driver. This guy actually was a heroin addict and an alcoholic, and he pulled himself out, got his CDL license, and started driving. He's one of my heroes.
It's an American success story, right?
Incredible guy. A little scary to look at, but incredible guy. So this dude is sitting there, and I'm going, you know, Tom, this is going to go away, and you need to be watching. And so we sat down and we brainstormed it, and we came up with, you know, I love to fix trucks, and I know how to do it. And if there's no driver in that truck, someone's going to have to be dispatched to fix it, and
absolutely,
I want to be that person.
Yes.
So he's already started training. He's already started buying his tools so that he can shift as this is coming about.
That's right, because I use as an example all the time, you know, the classic example, you know, the horse and buggy, all the people that were in the horse and buggy industry that got replaced by the cars, those individuals, those families, they probably ended up okay in different careers. More recently, you look at travel agents. At the age I am, at 47, I remember as a young adult, I would go to a travel agent when I first got into the working world and planned my honeymoon, an example, through a travel agent. So I remember that vividly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the horse and buggy people. But they're all gone.
Yes.
I mean, pretty much. I think there's some corporate travel agents that still are bouncing around. But by and large, there had to be a vast number of travel agents because every single town had a few travel agencies.
Mm-hmm.
They're all gone.
Do it online. Do it yourself.
Yes.
Yes.
So they figured out a way. But your point is at Forward Motion, your company, and what you talk about in the book is to get ready for what is going to happen in your industry, to be thinking about the changes that are coming, how technology and other factors are influencing the business. And you use the term design a career plan.
Mm-hmm.
So could you talk about designing a career plan?
Sure. So in response to what you just said, too, people have skills they're not aware of, and oftentimes they're the skills that come so naturally to them, they don't think of them as a skill. I talk to people, I said, what do you do? What do you like to do? He said, I get along with people. And it's like, that's a skill.
Yeah.
And it's valuable. And so talking with people, well, what group do you like to work with? You know, I've got a son and a daughter, and they're millennials, and I love being with those people. Oh, we're going to need managers of millennials. So going through this career plan, I cite five things. The first, we need to understand, a person needs to understand their values, because that's where we get meaning in the work we do. Everybody that comes to me says, I want a job that's meaningful, makes a difference. So that's their values.
Okay.
Second might be, I call it the attributes. That's what we are no matter where we are, like a sense of humor. You're a positive person. I don't care when I talk to you, you're a positive guy. That's an attribute. No matter where you are, you're mm-hmm. positive. So then we come to the skills, and I call them sets of skills. And then we get to the environment. I think people leave this out. What environment is a person optimally successful? A lot of people, few people, corporate world, desk, outdoors, car. What is the environment and what's the mix of environment for optimal success? So that's critical, too, and we forget that. But then you take all those, and that's about the person, and you have to overlay the market. And that's what I think other career management people forget. There's a market. It's supply and demand. Can I tell you a short story?
Please.
So a young man came to me, and he says, I just finished my master's degree in nuclear engineering. I'm not so hip on nuclear or engineering, but I know I want a job. a smart, smart young man.
Obviously.
And so we start talking about the market, and every nuclear engineer job wants a postdoc. He said, should I go back to school? I said, no. Postdocs make $30,000 a year for 7 years. And at the end of that, all they're good for is going and teaching in a college or something like that. And I said, you said you don't want to do that. I said, no. So I said to him, you have to find a place where there are fewer people applying for the job than there are jobs, because then we know you've got a great chance. So he took every single thing I asked him to do, and after about 3 or 4 weeks at working together, he comes back and he says, I found it. What is it? He said, Hadron Colliders. Really? I thought about that this morning at breakfast. What? And sure enough, there are 3 colliders in the U.S. They have to hire in groups of 3 because they have to go 24/7, so everybody has an 8-hour shift.
I see.
And there's only about 5 people applying for those jobs. He got an interview at every single place he applied, started working at Cornell in October, and they were so impressed with him, he practiced. He practiced so hard that they actually gave him a promotion before they hired him. They hired him as a number 2 instead of
That's
a 1.
That's fabulous.
And so now there weren't many jobs. There were just a few jobs.
Right.
So if we understand the numbers, there's 5,000 jobs and 50,000 people are going for those jobs. Those aren't good numbers for somebody, you know? So if the person says to me, but that's what I really, really want, I say back to them, okay, then we've got to have a strategy.
Sure.
That's so absolutely incredible that you're one of the people that get the jobs.
It makes complete sense. You know, there's so many people that have the mentality of, you know, thank God it's Friday. Oh, crap, it's Monday. And it's hard to get ahead doing that consistently.
Yes.
And what you're talking about in the book, and I know you do this with all of your clients at Forward Motion, is to take a long-term view, to try and think out strategically, taking into what you want to do plus what's going on in the market, geography-wise, trend-wise, and the like. It makes complete sense. And so one of the parts of the book that I really, really liked is you talked about essential career concepts for this career code in the 21st century. So one of them is take a long-term view.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that a little bit, but you don't think that somebody should just be focused on, so for example, let's say I needed a job and I'm looking for a job. I can come to you or use... just do myself, I try and find a job. But your point is, once you find a job, you should be thinking about how you could excel in that job, how you could advance in that job, and if you need to make a move, what the next move... You're progressing out the timeline, and you strongly urge people to think beyond just, oh, I got a job, I could just relax.
Right. So one of the first things we talk about is a job should be satisfying, sustainable. That's that Friday, oh good, it's Friday, oh mm-hmm. awful, it's Monday. Sustainable, I can do it week after week after mm-hmm. week. And it should meet their financial needs. And that's really important to what you do as well, because I tell people, what do you really need? Now add 30% to that, because I want them to have some enough to give away to help others, and I want them to have some to put away for the future.
Beautiful.
And I talk to them about those exact things. I mean, you're going to need that 30%. Help some other people, but prepare for your future. We don't know what's going to go on there. So those are 3 parts to it. And the other piece of it is the network. People are going to need to be known as experts, specific experts. And we need to have a group of people, of experts that we know. And this whole networking thing, when someone needs someone, oh, you need to call Joe because he's really outstanding at fixing trucks, whatever
right.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the network is becoming even more critical, and social media makes that a lot easier.
Yes. You talk about that connectivity. You also talk about collaboration over competition, which is a little bit of a generational thing, and it's one of the changes in the world today where we tend not to be as competitive, I think, just as maybe we were generations past.
Mm-hmm.
And collaboration in today's complex, fast-pacing world is really crucial. We see it here at Elliott Wealth. although I'm the founder and the owner, there's so much that goes on that I need to collaborate with my team constantly. It can't just be top down. I know everything and I filter it through this small business that we have. So can you talk about your views in this job career situation we're in the Western world about collaborating over competition and how that can help you survive and thrive in your career?
Well, even in forward motion, so my business coach lives in the UK. We connect for hours every week. But another contributor to the book is a top recruiter, an executive recruiter from Kennedy Executive. And Jorg is German, living in Paris. And we have another person that we tap into who's in Australia. And he's a stitch. He's in the hospitality industry and has 790,000 Twitter followers. And is incredibly well known.
Wow.
So, you know, I can say to him, you know, just, would you retweet this? And he says, yes. And all of a sudden, 300 people show up on my website. Mm-hmm. It's that fast. So we are global and we are well connected with that. Now, when I'm working with people, I tell people at a certain point, this is going to mimic what I think you may do as well. So I say to them, you need three recruiters or so that know who you are, know your expertise. And I want you to call them, say, once a quarter, 3-4 times a year, and say, you know, who are you looking for? Maybe I can help. Because this person should have a cadre of experts that they can recommend that they know are going to come through. And also, if they lose their job and they need help, that person's going to be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, as you move through your career, make sure some of these people are younger than you. Because you don't want to call a recruiter who said, yeah, I'm just kind of closing everything down right now because I'm getting ready to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have some recruiters that are early and mid recruiters in terms of their career so that they're keeping an eye out as well. So this, again, this collaboration with friends, with recruiters, with hiring professionals, important.
Makes sense. Switching gears slightly, you know, there's so much information out there and some of the technology things and globalization and offshoring and the political culture. So some of the stuff is kind of out there in the public domain. Can you cite some common misconceptions about the future of jobs, some things that maybe most people think is true, but you and Neil would think is not really so true and is a misconception?
Sure. There's a sense that, okay, all the jobs are going to leave. Technology is going to take all the jobs, and I'm not going to be able to do anything. And there's no truth to that. Jobs are leaving the workplace. This blows me down, this statistic. 3 out of 4 jobs that exist today are going to be taken over by technology that already exists. That's pretty frightening.
Yes.
What it doesn't incorporate is that there's other jobs that are going to be coming through.
Sure.
So understanding that there's types of jobs, for example, project management. Well, project management, in every industry, there's going to be a need for people to manage projects. There's a people element, a risk management that's not data-based risk, where we need somebody in the moment who can make a decision about how something can move forward. So user experience is another one. Customer experience, user experience, client, that's huge because the companies are in such competition. The companies that are going to get ahead are the companies that understand that the experience of their customer is what's going to build loyalty. And if they can't get that across, that user experience is everything.
That's right. Because it's easy to talk about, and it's very easy to identify. We talked about drivers, and you just mentioned careers that are in jeopardy. We talked about travel agents that have gone by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I have some relatives that are graduating from college, you know, young individuals, and they're going into the workplace and they're doing things where those jobs didn't even exist when they went into college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that pace of change we're talking about,
yes.
The technological advancement. But that should continue also. You know, my daughter is going to be a freshman in college next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk about, well, what do you want to do? And people are so polite. You know, they meet her and they say, Marissa, you know, what are you going to study in school? What do you want to do? And it's a normal question, but it puts pressure on the 17-year-old because
mm-hmm.
she feels like, well, if everybody's asking, maybe I ought to know. And I'm like, you know, Marcy, you don't need to know. It's perfectly fine. You know, I counsel her, you know, just say, I'm not sure what I want to do, but I'm anxious to go and learn, grow up, experience new things. You'll be fine. But probably the job she'll end up doing, or at the very least how it's done, hasn't even gotten figured out yet.
Yes, I've worked with people who started college, and by the time they graduated, nothing existed. And one fellow ended up, smart guy, ended up in New York City at a bike shop. And while he was there, he learned the entire New York City transit system and so forth. But he's a teacher at heart. He's a teacher.
Right.
And he wanted to write. Well, that wasn't going to work. So we are finding that. What my suggestion is with young people is understanding the kinds of things they enjoy doing and then investigating careers in those kinds of things. Careers in relationship management, for example. Well, I like my friends and I like being with my friends. And when you're with your friends, when you're deciding what you're going to do that evening, who's in charge? Are you a contributor, a supporter? How do you interact with them? And from that, we can start finding specific sets of skills that they are so natural at.
Right.
And then when they go to college, and I used to say this, I taught college for 20-some years, and I loved that a person could explore so many different things in a liberal arts college. That's not necessarily true anymore. They end up getting in there, they need to have a career track, or what are you going to major in? Switching means you're going to end up with this many more semesters, which increases the cost.
Yeah.
And it's no longer one of those places where they can go and explore. I grieve over that. So with that in mind, there's a lot of young people who are doing pre-college career counseling. I started a program for high school students. What do I do after college? Because they, one, they're worried about it.
Yeah.
Two, they're very concerned, and they don't want to make a mistake and end up somewhere that they hate.
Mm-hmm.
Who does?
Sure.
So I started this program called Career Definition. How do I define what the options are going to be so that they know I could go A, B, or C? I know how to watch them. I understand how to watch the market value of these. And I know that any one of them, I'm going to be able to shift along with it. So they know how to manage their career.
So as we wrap up, the final question for you. I think this is the final question. So I mentioned my daughter.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Career Definition. And you work with a lot of young individuals in your practice. So what advice would you give my daughter about going to college, advice you'd give her about getting prepared to enter the workforce?
An excellent question. The youngest person I've worked with was in the eighth grade, but he was so worried. His father, a former client of mine, said, "Will you talk to my son?" He's so concerned, so in he came. So we know that technology is only going to move forward. So someone comes in to me and says, "Well, you know, I always wanted to be a nurse."
Mm-hmm.
So, well, have you looked at the future of nursing technologies?
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked at whatever it is, add the technology piece to it? So if someone says relationship management, well, gone to a conference where you can download an app and know where everybody is in the huge, massive room that is a career manager or a wealth manager, and it automatically tells you where these people are and how you can meet them. So applications, figuring out how technology is going to implicate what they enjoy doing is going to be really important.
Very good.
And again, as I say, there are types of jobs that are never going to go away. Customer experience, for example. The whole thing of project management. Managing people is not going to go away. And as we look at 100 million millennials coming into the workforce, management is going to be critical in order to make this move forward.
Well, this was a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. So for individuals that are interested in getting your book, where could they find your book, Careermageddon?
Simply go to the website and click on the picture of it. So that would be forwardmotioncareers.com.
Beautiful. Thank you again. For listeners, we will be back with you on an upcoming episode of the Simply Financial Podcast very soon. In the meantime, I would appreciate it greatly if you would share this and other podcasts with friends, family, and coworkers. You could subscribe to the podcast by going to the Elliott Wealth Management website. That's www.elliottwealth.com. Elliott has two L's, two T's. You could also subscribe by going to the various podcast platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Thanks again. We'll be back soon.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of SagePoint Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against a loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. The information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of information provided at those websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to or your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of those websites, you assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the website you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, are not affiliated with SagePoint.